Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight, we have two Deep Woods terrifying cabin stories, starting with one that's already in the family. And the second story is about an Airbnb from hell. Literally. Because there is something out there in the woods, mimicking familiar voices. And it is not human. Today's drink of choice, and no, it is not sponsored, but it is one of my top three favorite beers. We have a Corona Extra. It's one of those drinks where it requires a lemon or a lime, and without it, it's simply trash. That's just my opinion. Modelo doesn't need it, but there's something about a Corona that is just so good, especially with tacos. Anyways, enough talk about beer, and more talk about spooky. It was late November in 2021, and I was making the 6-hour drive up to my family's remote cabin near the Boundary Waters. My job was simple. Winterize the place, drain the pipes, board up the windows, and lock it down until spring. The cabin is completely, and I mean completely off-grid, mind you. No cell service, no Wi-Fi, no neighbors for at least 10 miles in any direction. Just dense, ancient pine trees and silence. I arrived at around 4 p.m., and the sun was already starting to set. The temperature was already hovering down in the low 20s, and a thin layer of snow coated the ground. I got a fire going in the wood stove, unpacked my gear, and settled in for the night, planning to do all the heavy lifting the next morning. Around 9 p.m.-ish, I was sitting on the couch reading a book when I heard something outside. Now, when you spend enough time in the woods, you learn to filter out the normal noises. Wind whistling through branches, a branch snapping under the weight of snow, maybe a deer moving through the woods. Could really be one of 100 things. But it wasn't any of those things. It was a voice. I lowered my book and strained to listen. The wind was howling, so I thought maybe my mind was just playing tricks on me. But then I heard it again, a second time, clear as day, coming from the tree line about 50 yards from the back porch. Mark, are you out there? The car broke down. My blood ran cold. It was my fiance, Sarah. But here's the thing, the real kicker now. Sarah was in Chicago. I had spoken to her from a gas station landline because my cell service frickin' sucks out here just about 5 hours earlier. She was supposed to be at her sister's apartment in Chicago, Windy City, not out here. There was no physical possibility that she was standing in the freezing woods of northern Minnesota right now. I stood up, my heart hammering against my ribs. I walked over to the back window, cupped my hands over the glass to block out the glare from the fire, and peered out into the darkness. Nothing. Just the towering black silhouettes of the pine trees swaying in the wind. Then, it called out again. Mark, are you out there? The car's broken down. It wasn't just that it was her voice. It was the exact same inflection. It was the exact same spacing and accent, that Midwestern sound that she always had. It didn't sound like a person calling out in the cold. It sounded more like a tape recording playing the exact same audio file over and over again. Every frickin' survival instinct in me I had was screaming at me to lock the door, grab my hunting rifle, and frickin' hide. Cell service is frickin' useless, so you gotta hold your own. But the irrational human part of my brain was terrified that somehow, impossibly so, my fiancé was freezing to death in the cold. So, I grabbed my high-powered maglite and my 12-gauge shotgun from the corner of the room. I unlocked the deadbolts, pushed the heavy wooden door open, and stepped out onto the back porch. The cold hit me like a frickin' train. I racked a shell into the chamber, a loud metallic clack-clack that echoed into the trees. "Who's out there?" I yelled. My breath plumed in the freezing air. "I have a gun. Step out into the light." I swept the beam of the flashlight across the snow. The stark white beam cut through the darkness, illuminating the trunks of the trees. Silence. Absolutely, positively, frickin' nothing. I kept the light trained on the spot where the voice had come from, so I thought. And as I stared, I realized that one of the trees out there was moving. What I was looking at wasn't a tree. It was a leg. My flashlight traced slowly up from the snow. The leg was impossibly long, grayish white, and so emaciated that the skin looked like it was shrink-wrapped over the bone. I kept panning the light up, up, up until it stopped on the face. This thing was standing at least 10 feet tall, hunched over beneath the canopy of the pine trees. It had the vague shape of a human being, but its arms hung down past its knees, ending in long, jagged fingers. The skin on its face was pulled so tight that its lips were non-existent, leaving its yellowed, jagged teeth exposed in a permanent, horrifying grin. Its eyes were completely sunken in, just empty black voids reflecting the beam of my own flashlight. Then, the smell hit me. The wind had shifted, and my nose was suddenly flooded with the thick metallic stench of old copper and rotting meat. Frickin' blood, right? Or something dead or decaying. And I physically gagged. The creature didn't move. It just stared at me. And then, its jaw unhinged. It dropped open, unnaturally wide. And from the back of its throat, I heard my fiancé's voice again. "Mark, please, it's so cold. Let me in." But this time, the voice, it was layered. Underneath Sarah's voice was a low, rattling click, like bones grinding together. And it took one massive, silent step out of the tree line. Panic overtook me. I didn't think, I just reacted. I threw myself backwards off the porch, slammed the heavy door shut, and threw the deadbolt. My hands were shaking so violently I could barely slide the chain into its place. I backed away into the center of the living room, leveling the shotgun at the door. For 10, maybe 15 agonizing minutes, there was absolute silence. I thought maybe I had scared it off holding that big boy shotgun in my hand, even though this thing's a frickin' tower. Then, I heard the heavy thud on the roof. It had not left. It had climbed the cabin. I tracked the sounds of its footsteps, heavy, dragging thumps moving across the shingles above my head. It moved slowly towards the front of the cabin. Suddenly, I heard a tap on the living room window to my left. I slowly turned my head, and looking upside down through the top of the glass, its pale, sunken face was pressed against the pane. It was hanging from the roof. It tapped the glass with one elongated finger. Then it opened its mouth and spoke again. But this time, it wasn't my fiancé's voice. Do you know whose voice it was? That's right. It was my voice. It had mimicked the exact yell I'd given on the porch just like minutes ago. Who's out there? I have a gun. You better step out into the light. I backed down the hallway and locked myself into the windowless bathroom. I sat in the bathtub with a shotgun aimed at the door, trembling in the dark. All night long, it paced around the cabin. It would scratch at the walls, tap at the glass, and cycle through voices. It used Sarah's voice. It used my voice. It even started crying like a frickin' newborn baby, baby! It was trying every trick it knew to get me to open that door to the cabin. I didn't move until 8 a.m. when the sun was fully up and streaming through the cracks in the bathroom door. The woods were finally completely silent. I bursted out of the cabin, sprinting to my truck, and drove out of there as fast as I could, nearly rolling the vehicle on the icy logging roads. I never went back to winterize that family cabin. I put it on the market the very next week and sold it as is. People tell me it was just a bear, you're tripping. Maybe it was a cougar and that the isolation was playing tricks on the mind. But you could all go pound sand. I knew what I saw. And I know what the indigenous people of this region truly call it in their whispers. Do you know what it's called? Do I need to spell it out for you? Or just show you? The Wendigo. It is out there, and it's starving. And if you're deep in the woods and hear someone you love calling your name, do not go looking for them. Just run the other way.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
This takes place in September of last year. I was looking for somewhere quiet to work on a new landscape series, and I found this adorable, albeit incredibly isolated cabin on a little used vacation rental site, aka Airbnb. The listing had zero reviews, but the pictures were gorgeous. A hand-hewn log cabin right on the edge of a crystal clear lake, surrounded by towering forests. The price for the rental was almost too good to be true. And that should have been the first red flag in all honesty, but sometimes you just overlook things on purpose. So, what did I do? I booked the cabin for an entire week. The drive-in should have been my first warning, realistically. The GPS cut out an hour before I even arrived. The pavement turned into gravel. Then the gravel turned into a dirt logging road that wound deeper and deeper into the wilderness. When I finally pulled up, the sun was casting long, jagged shadows through the trees. The silence was heavy, the kind that feels like a physical weight pressing on your ears. The cabin itself was perfect, cozy with big windows looking out over the water. But as soon as I unpacked, a persistent low-level unease settled in around me. Everything was good and dandy until the third night, when the atmosphere had suddenly shifted. The weather turned unexpectedly cold, and a thick fog rolled off the lake, swallowing the cabin whole and the surrounding trees. At about 10 p.m. exactly, while I was sketching next to my fireplace, is when I heard it. It was faint, coming from the foggy tree line behind the cabin, and it sounded like a woman's voice. I froze, brush in hand, and listened, and my heart began to race. It called out, "Hello? Is anybody there? Can you help us?" The tone was polite, but tinged with a little bit of panic. My first instinct, as frightened as it was to be alone, was that someone actually was lost. So I went to the window and looked through the glass and peered into the soapy gray. And I saw absolutely, positively frickin' nothing, just shifting tendrils of fog. So I do what all stupid people do in horror movies. I went to the front door and opened it up, just a crack, and said, "Who's there? Are you lost?" The voice replied instantly, echoing oddly into the fog. "Yes, we're lost. We went for a hike and lost the trail. Our phone is dead. Can you show us the way back to the main road?" The request seemed so specific, so normal. I started to unchain the door, reaching for my flashlight, when a sudden thought stopped me. "Our phone is dead?" The voice had used "we" first, then "our," then "phone," singular. It was a subtle inconsistency, but in that profound isolation, it sounded monstrously wrong. Red flags were going off. Spider vibes were everywhere at that moment. I locked the door back up, my hands suddenly trembling. For the next few hours, I sat huddled by the fireplace, with every light on the cabin turned on. The voice kept calling from the fog. Every 10 minutes or so, it would repeat the exact same phrases with the exact same frantic yet strangely flat intonation. "Is anyone there? Can you please help us? Our phone is dead." It wasn't a person moving or getting closer. It was static, emanating from the existing same spot just beyond the porch's light. Around 2 a.m., the requests finally frickin' stopped. The silence that followed, realistically, was even worse. I crept back to the window, which faced the dense forest. I carefully parted the curtains, just a little. The fog had lifted slightly, but the darkness was still absolute. I grabbed my powerful artist's spotlight and swept it across the tree line. The beam hit something near the edge of the woods, perhaps maybe 30 feet away. It was impossible to process immediately. What I saw was tall, too tall, crouched strangely behind a thick pine. It looked like it was wearing a heavy grayish cloak. But as the spotlight held on to it, I realized that it wasn't a cloak. It was patches of fur on pale skin and that was stretched taut over an emaciated frame looked starving. It didn't move. It didn't react to the light. It just remained perfectly still, half hidden by the trees, staring towards the cabin with large, unblinking eyes that reflected the spotlight with a dull, vacant shine. And then, its jaw dropped open, uncomfortably wide. From the back of its throat, in a perfect replication of my own terrified whisper from earlier, I heard, "Who's there? Are you lost?" I have never felt terror like in that moment. It was a complete paralyzing dread that bypassed thought and went straight to my frickin' core. I backed away slowly, never turning back on the window until I was in the smaller interior room. I spent the rest of the night locked in that windowless room, aka the frickin' closet, listening. I didn't hear footsteps, banging noises, or scratches, or anything like that that you may hear from other stories. Mostly just regular forest sounds and complete silence. Which in its own way was more terrifying, because at least if it made noise, I would know where it was. When daylight filtered in through the windows, I finally gathered the courage to open up the door of the closet and peek outside. Nothing was damaged inside the cabin, so this creature never broke inside. It remained outside. The question was now, was it still out there watching the cabin waiting for me to make a mistake? Or is it nocturnal and only comes in the night? Eventually, I peeked through the several windows and grabbed my things when I felt a little bit more confident and got to my truck. As I sped down that logging road, not caring about my truck suspension, I looked in my rearview mirror. A figure was standing in the middle of the road, right where the driveway met the dirt track. It was tall, thin, and simply watched me drive away. And I recognized it instantly. And it was no deer. I never went back for my art supplies. I left the keys in the cabin's mailbox and drove straight to the nearest populated town, which was like about 35 minutes away or so. And that was about it until I got back to my apartment. Never did rent an Airbnb ever since then. Especially, I wouldn't do it in the frickin' woods. Hell, I've never even been back hiking since then. But this was my story. Well, that wraps it up for the two terrifying cabin stories, my forest minions. Let me know what you think down in the comments below. Definitely some Wendigo vibes, especially the first one. Well, technically both of them, because a Wendigo mimics loved ones, mimics yourself, and any other prior victims that you probably don't even know of, right? Definitely some Wendigo vibes. Some people may say, Skinwalker. Yeah, I said it, what? But the Skinwalker is a shapeshifter. The Wendigo is not. It mimics you, tricks you to get you where it wants before it eats you alive. And sometimes, no, all the time, that seems a hell of a lot worse. Let me know down in the comments below, and we'll see you next time.